I never felt like I fit in, never had any self-esteem, never thought I was pretty enough, smart enough, all those kinds of things. When I first started dabbling in alcohol and drugs, it was the first time I felt like I fit in. I actually felt, I remember after my first drink, it was like I could breathe, finally, after 15 years. I was 15 years old. Every time I had the opportunity, I wanted to do it again because it was when I felt normal. I started working in the bars and we would go to the casinos afterwards. That is when I first experienced gambling. I had absolutely no control over it whatsoever. And I would get better and then I would get worse. It seemed like the more lonely I was, the more I would go. It started affecting my ability to pay my rent and that my parents helped out. I was a single mom, you know, but I took advantage of it. I knew in the back of my mind they weren't going to let my son and me be homeless, you know. It wasn't always a conscious thought, but it was an unconscious thought, I know. And so there was really no reason, there was no consequences for me to stop. Through the years, I would get better and I would get worse. When I started doing speed or crank, whatever you want to call it, is when it got really extremely bad. I remember in the middle of the night not being able to sleep because of the drugs I had done and leaving my home and my 11-year-old boy sound asleep by himself to go gamble. And somehow I survived, and he survived, and it just went on for years. I would skate by, and my parents would bail me out, but I would spend days in the casino, never leaving, and losing an apartment, having to move, getting credit cards and maxing them out immediately just to get cash and go gamble more. I have stolen from my parents. I have stolen from my son's piggy bank. I have pawned jewelry that meant a great, great deal to me, heirlooms. I would do almost anything to get the money. It was something that overpowered me, but it was the only time, other than doing drugs or alcohol, I felt like I could breathe and just get away from everything, not have to think about how much I hated myself or what I wasn't doing or what I was doing that I didn't want to do or shouldn't be doing. It gave me a focus point, a bad focus point, but a focus point where I could escape and not feel or think about anything except what I was doing at that moment.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie. Today we're talking about gambling addiction, and our guest today is Dr. Brenda Market Green. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
You know, if you look at the video of Cindy, you wouldn't tell that she's a gambler, that she's a gambling addict. What does a gambling addict look like?
A gambling addict can be anybody that is next to on the street, somebody you sit next to in church. There is no specific look to a gambling addict.
Wow.
You can't tell them from any other person that you know.
Yeah. So what's going on with them? Why is there such a compulsion to gambling? What's happening with them?
There are a lot of factors that go into gambling addictions. I have several clients. Most of my clients that come in started gambling because they were trying to make ends meet financially. Mm. And usually what's happened is when they have their first big win, it triggers something inside of them where they feel the need to gamble more. They have a belief. It just kind of starts this belief system that if I could win big like this, then I can continue to win big. And so their mind doesn't process the losses that they have. It just begins to process the gains. And so there's this dysfunctional, illogical thinking that starts to take
changes
place.
Changes the way they even think.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It almost sounds like it starts out innocently enough in mm-hmm. some way, because we're in a bad economy or, you know,
right.
can't make ends meet. So, hey, I'll go try to gamble and make some money for
yes.
the family.
Yes.
And it turns bad. You know, what happens? How does it all get out of whack?
What begins to happen is the brain starts to process the gambling, and it forms what's called neural pathways. And we can see neural pathways in things like like driving. When you first start driving, it's something that's really awkward. You have to tell yourself how to do it. But after you've done it a while, you just get in your car and you drive. Mm. It's because the neural pathways have been set where you can jump from the beginning of something to further into it without having to think or process it.
Okay.
Now, financial reasons are not the only reasons that people gamble.
Okay.
Many of my clients come in because they have so many stressors in their lives. And it could be things, like I said, with the financial problems. It can be just stressors from working a lot of hours or family problems. And gambling, the casinos actually provide a venue by which they don't have to think about the problems in their
sure.
lives. They can just kind of zone out. And
now, it's interesting you say that. Let's talk about the casinos, maybe the industry just a little bit. I mean, they're not just innocent in this whole thing,
no,
are they?
Not at all.
What's happening with the casino industry, the gambling industry itself, that's drawing so many people in?
The casinos target people. If you begin to go gambling, you will be put on a mailing list, and they actually mail you incentives to go and gamble.
Wow.
So, say someone is trying to get some money to pay some bills.
Hmm.
A lot of times, they don't have to come up with the initial finances to put into gamble. I have some clients who are up to $5,000 incentives. So they can go
wow.
sit in the casino and they don't have to put any money down and they can start gambling and win.
Man, I bet that's a powerful thing, because here you are, someone who may be struggling in life, maybe the marriage isn't going so great, maybe you're just down, and here's a casino that says, hey, come to Vegas for the weekend, we'll make you feel great, we're going to pick you up in a nice car. You know,
right?
Is that what's going on with somebody who's really struggling?
With people that win quite a bit, they have a lot of those luxuries that are provided for them. Hotel rooms, the limos picking them up. Most of the people in this area, the casinos are just so close that it's easy enough to drive 5 or 10 miles
yeah.
To go to the casino and try and win some money.
Sure.
And if now a client or a gambler can, they can get on a list where they're not allowed in the casino, but it's just for that one specific casino. So they can drive another 20 minutes. There's, I don't know, 8 to 10 casinos in this area.
Wow.
And so they can choose from many other casinos. A lot of the casinos don't enforce that. You know, I think the other problem with gamblers is that like I mentioned with the incentives, when you're in the casino, you're not putting down money. So that connection with the financial loss isn't there. Because each time you press a button,
yeah,
you know, it's money out of your account.
For sure.
But it's not something tangible. And so
yeah, talk
it,
about
it doesn't
that.
Trigger the same,
yeah,
the
that's
same
a powerful
things as
thing.
If you were putting it down.
Yeah,
right?
You're not, it's just sort of this transaction that happens.
Yes.
You don't even feel it necessarily. But do you think people just get caught in that sort of rut of and not seeing the money go away, and it's almost like it's play money or something?
It is. Well, it's not even that it's play money.
Yeah.
Play money is at least tangible. It's
tangible,
something
yeah.
you put down, like with Monopoly money.
Sure.
In the casinos, the money is just not visually present whatsoever.
Wow.
And the way the casinos are set up is there's lights on 24 hours a day, so they lose track of time. Clients can sit there for 2-3 days at a time without realizing how much time has actually passed. And if you went into a casino, and part of our training was going into the casino and watching, you know, what was going on, we sat and we counted one lady at one of the games and the number of times she was able to push the button in 1 minute. And it was 50 times. So we calculated if that was a dollar machine, even just $1 each time, at the end of that evening, if she stayed there for even just a couple hours, she could lose a tremendous amount of money. But cognitively, it just doesn't click the same way as if you're actually putting that money down.
Wow.
It's
you know,
incredible.
With Cindy's story, it sounds like she grew up in a certain sort of household, is overly strict or whatever. What types of backgrounds perhaps lend themselves to people slipping into a gambling addiction?
Just like with any other addiction, if you have family problems, that can really lend itself to someone going and gambling, or even just getting addicted to other types of things. There is a high comorbidity with gambling addictions okay. and drug and alcohol addictions. Mm. They run hand in hand oftentimes.
Sure.
The casinos also, you know, a lot of people smoke in there. So somebody who doesn't smoke initially may begin smoking. There's bars in there. So it really lends itself to...
Can lead to a lot of different things
right,
when it comes to gambling.
And so when you have somebody with family problems, if you have somebody who's really shy or somebody just really anxious, it's a place where they can go and just forget who they are and you know, perceive themselves as being a better person or just living a fantasy life.
For sure. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
In 2000, my son was unjustly convicted and sent to a 10-to-life prison when he was 18. I held it together for about 6 years. I held it together. I was working and I was paying my bills. I was on drugs and alcohol the whole time. But it wasn't until like the last 2 years that I just, I got so bad I couldn't hold down a job. I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't do anything. I'd always had my own apartment, paid my bills. I take that back. I had always been able to either manipulate my parents into doing it or pay them on my own. It got to the point where I didn't even care. And I was getting unemployment, but I didn't care if I paid the rent. That I was just so badly in my addiction. And that was just prior to my son coming home from prison. And when he got home, he saw how bad I was, and he sent me to a 30-day secular rehab. And the day I got out of that rehab, I drank. And I eventually didn't care if the rent was paid. I lost my apartment. I moved in with him and my mom, and I couldn't stay sober. The more I did drugs, the more I gambled, and I couldn't stop either one. And I was losing my family, and I was losing hope, and my alcoholism and my drug addiction was getting worse to cover up the pain and the shame. And my family said, you either have to get help or be homeless. And I've never been homeless. I didn't know how to be homeless. And so I started calling around, and one of the, most of the rehabs wanted $1,500 a week. You know, we didn't have any money. I didn't have any insurance. One of them suggested calling Teen Challenge. And I called and started the process, and I came in on January 12th, and my life has completely changed. I no longer have the desire for drugs or gambling or alcohol. It's restored my family's trust in me. It's restored my relationship with my son, and I'm finally learning how to love myself.
Welcome back to Unhooked, and we're talking about gambling addiction. So, you know, it's not just casinos that people are getting hooked on gambling in. What are some other venues and places that people are getting into gambling?
People are getting into gambling in many different areas. The internet is huge on gambling, and we are finding that children, very young ages, 10 years, you know, maybe even younger, anybody that can play games on the internet, are getting hooked. Bingo, playing even the game Pogs. I don't know if you remember that from years ago, where they would trade those little round.
Yeah.
They were called Pogs.
Sure.
Horse racing, anything where there could be betting, sports betting in work situations, anything where there is any type of a bet placed.
Sure.
And that bet doesn't always have to be financial.
Yeah,
it,
for sure.
It's just the act of the placing of the bet. With the kids' programs on the internet now, a lot of times kids have to put money in order to play their characters for a longer
yeah.
period of time. That's
yeah.
a form of gambling.
Wow, so we're almost setting kids up in some ways to be gamblers,
yes.
to take risks and so
yes.
forth. You know, it's interesting that I almost think that sometimes people who get into gambling, are they just bored? Are they just have nothing else to do and they're looking for an excitement, looking for an adrenaline rush? Are they like the, you know, the sports people who like to take all the risk and do all the extreme sports?
Some of them are.
Yeah.
Some of them are. We had talked just briefly before we started here about a client that I had who makes a really good amount of money and began gambling because all of the challenges in this individual's life had been met. And so seeking out the next challenge or seeking out something that is that will tap into that adrenaline, give them that adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
So again, it's just multifaceted. People gamble.
Yes. Are there specific triggers that go with a gambling addiction?
The triggers actually come when somebody either hears about gambling. The addictions follow along the same line as if somebody was suffering from a substance abuse addiction. There's that anxiety that comes up, the desire to go gambling. A lot of times that anxiety is what pushes them over the edge. They can resist that urge so long, but then there's a point where the anxiousness
it's
too much and they have to do
something. They have to have that release.
Yes, so they go gambling.
Sure.
Or they get on the internet and go gambling or go to the horse races or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. What are the treatment options for folks who are addicted to gambling?
There are a lot of treatment options. Several places in the state of California, I don't know about other states, but I know in California we have inpatient treatment centers that they can, usually they're put on a waiting list, but then they can get into inpatient treatment. The state of California has a program where problem gamblers and their families or anybody affected by the gambling, so even friends or coworkers, are eligible for free services.
Yeah.
I know in other states there are programs similar to that where the casinos will often put in, they help to fund the treatment for gamblers.
Wow.
So
they almost they acknowledge that there's actually a problem going on out there.
Some of them are actually forced to do that.
Sure.
But there is some acknowledgement there, especially when it's somebody who's coming in and gambling. And I mean, that's the most visible place, as we've talked about. There's other venues by which people gamble, but the most visible is when somebody is in a casino and they're racking up the debts, and then the casino kicks them out.
Yeah.
And they can't come back. So those are the ones they refer to.
There's a real problem there that's going on.
Right.
So, you know, you think about faith and our relationship with God, and it would almost seem like a person who is a gambler, you know, has a very weak faith. They're putting their trust in their ability to gamble and make money. Speak to the spiritual dynamic that's going on with the gambler.
You know, a lot of times I hear people say that if we're Christians, if we're really truly Christians, we won't have problems. That's just so wrong. It's such a misnomer because we have sin in this world, we do suffer from problems. With the gambler, for those who are going and gambling to try and meet their finances, there is a portion of that comes down to a lack of faith. And I think many times when the family contributes, when there's been problems like marital problems in the home, or there's stressors that the family suffers from, and people just don't know how to reach out to God.
Yeah.
That training them, helping them to understand, first of all, that God still loves them. They can't do anything that is going to ever separate them from the love of God. We know
Amen.
That. The Bible promises that.
Amen.
So reminding them of that. Many times people stay away from God because of that.
Sure.
But reminding them of that and then helping them to grow that faith, to be able to take almost like baby steps in building their faith so that they can understand that God will take care of them.
Sure.
But it's a really tough thing for them to do.
Are there groups that exist for gamblers? I know there's AA and so many different groups.
Yes.
Are there groups?
There are GA groups, which are for the gamblers themselves. And then there are groups for the families or friends or anybody affected entitled Gam Anon. So those, I actually have a link that people can look into to find gambling resources here in the United States and outside of the U.S.
Sure.
for any of our viewers.
Is there hope for the gambler?
There definitely is. There definitely is.
Sure.
With the state of California, they are given anywhere from 16 to 24 sessions. And within that period of time, if somebody is really engaging in services, I've seen many people stop gambling. So there's a lot of hope.
That's good. You've been terrific. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. And Unhooked will be back.
My recovery wouldn't have been possible without God. I could have gone to a secular rehab again, and I believe full-heartedly that the same thing would have happened. But when you leave that secular rehab, you don't have someone walking with you every moment of every day. And I have that with Jesus Christ. He never leaves me. I don't have to go to a meeting to find him. He's right there with me, in my soul and in the Bible. And I can talk to him whenever I feel whatever I'm feeling. If I need strength, all I have to do is ask him for it. If I need patience, all I need to do is ask him for it. And he will never forsake me. And he is my strength. And he is my reason that I'm alive and that I can stay sober. The changes in me, there's nobody else, nothing else could explain it but God. He's working on me, but he's given me a sense of peace. I know I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I'm seeing myself turn into the person that I should have been all along. He's given me confidence, which I thought I'd never have any of, ever. He's rebuilding my relationships. He's changing how I feel about myself. I've always hated myself, never liked myself, no matter what. From the way I looked to what I sounded like to what I was able to do or not able to do, I now have a sense of appreciation for what I can do, my talents that he gave me. So God is real to me now, and I can see him in every single thing around me. My name is Cindy, and I'm Unhooked.
Dr. Brenda just shared with us about the devastation that gambling can bring to families. Having money and then using that money in order to try and make more money, and the addictive quality that that brings into so many people's lives. Cindy was one of those. And she understood that from the very first time she gambled, she was hooked on it. I'm wondering if today you would think about the possibility that you could take a gamble on God, that God might be willing to take control of your life if you would give him a chance. So many of us believe that we have to only depend upon ourselves. And we don't understand that we build structures in order to survive that need to be brought to death. We have this idea in the Christian world about being crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. But often we don't understand how to apply this wonderful biblical truth in real life. In the case of gambling, what does it mean to die to gambling, to die to being in control of my own life, to letting gambling be the thing that runs my life, to looking to gambling to make me feel good or to feel important? Dying to self basically means that I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God in an act of surrender. This act of surrender is essential to recovery because most addicts, have believed that they have to manage all of the ins and outs of their own lives. They really can't trust God. And so turning your will and your life over to God, saying, you know, God, I think you are big enough to handle my life, and making a decision, you know, I'm going to turn my will, my capacity to make decisions, and my whole life, my future over to you, is essential for recovery. Now, isn't that gambling on God? God is the one person, the only God who's big enough, your creator who made you, who you can take a gamble on. I want to assure you today that God is big enough, God is strong enough to handle whatever it is that you are facing. Gambling on God is the only safe gamble there is in this world. All of us need to make that decision to die to control, to die to managing our own life, and to gambling on God. For more information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.